Hey, this is Gary.
This is Mike.
And Daniel. We're not professionals. We're just three addicts sharing our experiences, strength, and hope regarding recovery.
Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other addicts and to practice these principles in our lives.
Welcome to another episode of the 12th Step Podcast. This is Mike.
And this is Gary.
And this is Daniel.
We are continuing our discussion with Isaac, who is our guest here today.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who are getting caught up on our podcasts, the last episode, Isaac shared with us his first step. We had a chance to sort of visit about that.
Yeah.
We're interested now, Isaac, in talking a little bit about your recovery.
Yeah, in fact,
walk us through. Go ahead.
I'm really excited about this one.
Yeah. We've been a part of his existence since recovery came about. I do remember those episodes, those experiences of his relapses and his moments. So I was there for some of that, and those were trying times. I can remember that. So walk us through your recovery, Isaac.
Go ahead, and I think we ended our last episode with your clean date. Or
yeah.
Go ahead and start us there. It was
August 1st of 2018.
All right. Yeah.
So I think we talked about it earlier. It's 5 years, 7 months, and 13 days have been pretty exciting.
Almost 6 years.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. Where did you want me?
Well,
to...
walk us through your recovery experiences.
Before he jumps into that, I just want to point out one thing. You know, so you're almost at 6 years, and you're still with your wife.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah. So she has supported you through your recovery and everything. And I know there's a lot of addicts out there that really worry that, if I tell my wife everything, she's going to leave me. It's the end.
Yeah.
But that's not always the case.
Yeah, no, that's not always the case. And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, when I made that decision to finally disclose everything and really get serious mm-hmm. about recovery and try to change my life because I'd realized, you know, how unmanageable my life had become, right? And I needed help. I wasn't doing that for her.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I couldn't do that for her. If I was doing it for her, it wouldn't have worked.
Correct.
Right? And so a lot of why we're still together is because of her, being willing to let me effectively step away from, you know, being present in order to work on myself
mm-hmm.
and to get myself better and to get clean and to become a better, you know, and do the work, do the therapy work necessary to get myself to where,
you know, that's one of my favorite things about recovery. You know, there's this idea that when you, that you're worth your own best effort, and when you take and you put, you make of yourself the best version that you can be, you know, initially it sounds like a selfish concept, you know, but by default, when you're your best self, you become a better father, husband,
mm-hmm.
employee. Everything that you are, you know,
absolutely.
Rises with that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I wanted to point out that I love about your story is when you hit rock bottom and you made your decision, okay, that from that point on, everything was different.
Yeah, it was really different. It's like I didn't, for lack of a better way to explain, it's like I didn't care. I didn't mm-hmm. care what happened to me, right? Like, it was just, sweetheart, here it is. This is who I am in all of my horrible glory, for better or for worse. This is the man that I. These are the choices that I've made that have led me to be in this position right here in this moment, sitting on our bed, having this discussion with you. You can take me or you can leave me. As much as I love you, I do not much care which it is at this moment. I know that I have to be good for me. Like, I have to get better for me. For anybody that might be worried about losing their life or losing their spouse, like, that was a big part of why I continued to act out and why I continued to stay quiet, you know, and stayed in isolation and, you know, until you're willing to accept life on life's terms, regardless of what happens, right?
Yeah.
Like, she very well could have and had every right in the world to just say, all right, buddy,
I'm out.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Right. Yeah, right. There were some tough days during the middle of all that.
Yeah, there was.
There were some times that she was pretty rough on you, I recall. And I think every one of us had some experience of that.
Yeah.
I think each one of us are fortunate. Anyone whose wives was willing to go through and say, you know what, I'm willing to stay with you as long as you're willing to work on your recovery.
Right.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Well, they say that when you start recovery, relationships get better or they end.
Yeah.
But I love the other part about your story that I really relate to and I really like is that you adopted this idea of whatever it's going to take. I'm going to do this for me. I will not live like this any longer. And if the consequences of that are that you leave me or I end up, you know, doing this, so be it. I'm committed to this course of action.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just, it's hard to explain. It wasn't necessarily one big triumphant moment with, you know, the clouds parting and the brass band playing. It was really more of just a few small subtle decisions over time that just became this concept of, I wouldn't have respected her any less if she decided to leave. She had every right to do it. And I'm so grateful that she did. You know, I couldn't, I owe everything to her. You know, I could not be who I am and where I am without her love and support. So again, like, you know, if anybody's worried about, you know, what's going to happen to them when they go, man, you just got to do it. You just got to accept the fact that that might happen. And that might suck, but what's more important, you know, living this horrible two-faced life for the rest of your life,
mm-hmm.
or figuring out how to truly live.
I think as addicts, we try to control everything.
We do.
You know, we try to control the outcomes of everything. We try to control all of these things, and it's really not until you learn to surrender or give over that control and take life on life's terms, like you said, that suddenly you begin to live.
Yeah, it's this, you know, the great poet and songwriter once wrote, at the moment of surrender, you get vision over visibility, right? Like, instead of seeing what's right in front of you, like I had been living my whole life, making every decision with what was right in front of me, you know, what was next, right? And then it was like I was able to gain some sort of a vision of what I could be or what could be, right?
I'm amazed also of how much of our behavior today, you know, I'm going to guess at Isaac's age, but I know how old I am, how much of that really had so much to do with my 8-year-old Mike, my 10-year-old Mike, my 15-year-old Mike, and all those years that I struggled with how to fit in my environment, how to navigate difficult circumstances, how to navigate, you know, a school experience that didn't go well, whatever it was, you know, the dating years, all those things that created so much stress in my life, that I found this thing that worked when I was 8, that now at 58, I'm still, my life is blown apart as a result of it, but it's this thing that I've kind of hung on to, like, this is the only thing I know. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean,
we all end up sort of that affects our life. Oh, yeah. Years later.
In therapy, they call it IFS, you know, the internal family systems, where you have a protector part.
Yeah.
You know, and that we develop that really young, and, you know, and it gets stronger and stronger every time we use it. And, you know, when we get to our age and that's still engaged, it really fights.
And it's really
hard.
Engaged.
Do you ever look back at that moment, you know, or those moments when you were really, really young and think, gosh dang, man, you were just a kid.
Yeah.
You were so in over your head and had no idea. Somebody just needed to give you a hug.
Yep.
I know.
You know, right? And can you, I've learned, I don't know how to say this exactly. I've learned to look back at that person that I was and give him a little bit of grace.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and quite honestly, through a lot of my addictive process, I was really cruel to that person.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Sure. Especially if you've come from a strong religious background of any type, where all of that is just so shame and guilt based.
So, Isaac, would you share with us a little bit what your recovery looked like? I mean, we know that you started with a therapist, and so when you made the commitment, this is what I'm going to do. And we've already hinted that you were instrumental in helping us set up a 12-step program and that, you know, you were, and obviously he was involved with some of the group therapy that all of us were involved in. We were in different groups together and things like that. But share for our listeners a little bit what your recovery, the actual recovery kind of looked like as you went through that process.
It was really interesting. Like you said, there's the mechanisms for recovery, seeing a therapist, doing group sex addiction recovery therapy, doing 12-step recovery. A lot of it had to do with connecting with you guys, mm-hmm. right? Like people of my same tribe.
Right.
You know? And it was interesting because, you know, part of the big lie that I sold myself my entire life, especially where I was the youngest of three older brothers, and I had idolized my brothers. I had put them on a pedestal. They were all much older than me and out of the house and in their careers a lot earlier than I and starting their own families. And it was just like, they were such, right? I pedestalized these guys that it just created more isolation for me, right? So connecting with people that were in my same camp, right? It was such a relief to hear your story and your story and your story mm-hmm. and his story and his, you know, all these other guys that are having the same, they had the same thoughts that I had, right? Like, I'm the only one. I'm broken. I'm the only one in my family that has this, right? Like, I can't be the only one that has this. Nobody mm-hmm. can know that I had this, right? In terms of, honestly, Gary, in terms of tools and thought processes and behaviors, most importantly, that really kind of helped lead to my recovery, a lot of it had to do with accepting provisional beliefs, right? This concept that my best thinking in life has gotten me to this point. I should probably not trust myself anymore. I should probably reach out to individuals, such as my therapist, friends like yourself who were, you know, mentoring therapy groups, when I'm having a difficult time wrapping my head around any type of concept. And I mean any type of concept, whether it was at work or a frustrating problem I was dealing with at work, some car cut me off on the drive home today. Now, what kind of a thought process does that send me down, right? Like, reaching out to individuals that I trust who can help me work through, okay, old Isaac would have thought this, which would have led him to do this, which would have led him to feel this, right? Now, new Isaac, through the help of trusted individuals, can go down a different thought process, a more healthy way of looking at things and viewing any one given circumstance. That and being able and willing to sit down and put down whatever I might have been doing in the moment and process whatever my wife wanted to process and talk about in the moment and just forget myself and just listen to what she had to say and discuss what she wanted to discuss, no matter how long, no matter how deep, no matter how difficult. So those were a couple of really big thought processes that changed, that really helped me in my recovery.
That's actually big. I'm just sitting here thinking of the circumstances. My mind is racing of all the times when it's just so nice to have somebody that could relate to me, a sponsor or a mentor mm-hmm. or something like that. And I think you hit it right on the head. Somebody from our tribe, right? Somebody who understood my circumstance to bounce an idea off, saying, look, this is where I'm going with this, and have, you know, someone on the other end of the phone walk me back from that, saying, well, no, wait, you know, you turned left here when maybe you should have gone right. And it, you know what I'm saying? Just basic stuff like that. That was so helpful.
Yeah,
that
is, you know, so helpful. And the funny part about it, for me, and I don't know if you guys experienced the same thing, I'm pretty sure Mike did, but I really kind of started to get some real recovery under my belt, like, I would kind of get excited about how I would approach a new situation, right? That I was, and I would think, oh, this is how a recovering person would think about it. Oh, and I'd get like really kind of proud of myself, right? And I'd get kind of high on myself, and I'd go share it with my therapist. Like, yeah, well, this happened.
And this is how I did it.
Look how I did it. Look at me. Give me an attaboy, right? And he would just be like, bruh, you are not any more healthy than you were 4 months ago, buddy. Good luck.
You know? And you know that I went through that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I think we've all had those moments.
Sure. So. Give me an attaboy. Come on, give me an attaboy.
Oh, yeah, I just want the approval.
That's right.
Look at this great thing that I did. It's like, well.
I need my gold star sticker. Yeah. That's what you should have been doing all this time.
Yeah, it was months into working real recovery work before I realized what I was doing, right?
Yeah.
Or my therapist finally pointed it out to me. Like, I think he said something like, oh, you're just like a cute little puppy dog, always looking for approval, aren't you?
And I've heard that one too.
Yeah.
You go to hell.
I remember in my very first SAGE experience where I talked about graduating from this. Do you remember that?
Oh, one? Yeah. How could I not? It was the running joke for it's still a
it
joke.
It still is the running joke. Joke
that we're going to graduate and there would be some sort of, you know, diploma handed out at the end of 20 weeks and that we would be, you know, remarkably celebrated at all of our recovery acumen. And I just still to this day am a little embarrassed that even came out of my mouth. But
and then, you know, you work through all that kind of stuff and you work hard and then you get to the point where, you know, it doesn't really matter. I don't need anybody's.
Right.
You know, right. Then they start coming.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, so strange.
I remember being part of a group text one time where others were talking about the accolades that would come after they'd reached their 20 weeks. And I interjected and said, you bet. I can just see my wife saying, congratulations, Mike. Congratulations for not going out with a prostitute tonight. I think that's fantastic. You know?
Would you like a gold star with that?
Yeah. I mean, that just it just doesn't even sounds wrong. You
yeah.
know? And that's the sort of mentality that I was thinking about, right?
Yeah, but that
there'd be some accolade associated with this.
Those early weeks and months of recovery, I mean, you're learning a new skill. You're learning a whole new skill set and a whole new way to live. And you know, it's hard to navigate some of that in the beginning.
It really is.
I think a lot of it has to do with, like, for the first time in my life, I feel different.
Yeah.
Right? And so to me, it was just like, oh, okay, I feel different. Then this is good. Then I'm okay. Then I'm going to be all right, right?
Right.
Like, and don't realize, you know, this, it really is taking your life one day at a time. And I totally, and another big belief that I had to adopt was that, like, I could turn around the corner in any given circumstance on any given day and be, and make one decision that will put me right back in the same spot that I was.
Yeah,
before.
Right.
Right. You just gotta accept the fact that that's always a possibility and it will always be there.
Yeah. Do you know what it was? It's kind of interesting that you say that. One of the most interesting moments in recovery, and in the moment it was actually quite comforting, because I remember very clearly thinking, I don't know how I'm ever going to live without this stuff. I never have. I've never been able to navigate that. This is really early.
Right.
And then it occurred to me that, you know, pornography is still there.
Yeah.
Prostitutes are still there. If that's what you want, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not very far.
It's not. Yeah.
It's not any farther than it ever has been. You know. So, it was kind of strange in that early moment. It was like, okay, I'm just choosing something better. It's still there. The option's still there, but I'm choosing something better. And then how later on I started, you know, to, like you were illustrating. No, I need to accept the reality. It's still there. You know, I need to be careful. I can't be 10 feet tall and bulletproof.
Right.
And, you know.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, my wife, I love her to death. She's so sweet. But she's a lot like my therapist where, like, she can say some things that she will cut right through all of the bullshit to get to, right? And so, like, there will be times where, you know, she and I will be talking about something, whether or not we're agreeing or disagreeing, and she'd be like, yeah, I think that's the addict way of thinking about it, don't you?
Then you have to look at her and go, well, you're not wrong.
well,
dig it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Those have been really big, important, at least for me, that have been helped me become somewhat successful is this concept of putting everything else aside, accepting life on life's terms, and trusting that other people know better how to manage my life than I do in that moment.
Right? Yeah. So let me ask you another couple questions.
Shoot.
Okay. Is it worth it? Is doing the work worth it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting how worth it is, because a lot of my addiction, throughout my life, I would use my addiction to escape being vulnerable or emotional or feeling certain emotions that I didn't want to feel, embarrassment, sadness, things like that. And you know, it's really interesting at how much more vivid my life is on an emotional spectrum, right? Like even the bad feelings, even the sadness, as much as it might suck in any given moment, if I'm feeling sad about something, I'm aware of how important it is that I'm able to feel that, and that it's normal, and that I'm a human, and that it's a good thing that I'm feeling those things.
And you're being authentic. Yeah.
And being authentic. Yeah. So the good and the bad, right?
It's
a lot more vivid. Life is more
vivid. I love that word. Yeah. So there's actually something, a quote that I heard, your emotions have a story. What are they trying to tell you?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's something I've been kind of focusing on, is where I have those emotions coming up, sitting down and writing and asking, okay, what are you trying to tell me? Because there's something coming up for a reason. And we've just gotten so used to pushing them aside, but they're still there. They still want to tell that story.
I love that, vivid.
And I love that word.
Yeah, that is such a good way to put it. That's fantastic.
So yeah, it's absolutely worth it, just for no other reason than like it feels like I'm experiencing life for the first time as, you know, a 35-year-old man.
Okay, let me ask you another question.
Dolby stereo now, huh?
Does it?
It's no longer monochrome.
That's right.
Yeah.
4K video. Yeah,
right. Well, you know, this is. I love this part of recovery, and I don't think that we get to share this as often as I would like. You know, I love the success. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So my next question is does it work?
Does recovery work? Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because it seems like something that is insurmountable. But for me, I can't speak for anybody else, but for me, the only insurmountable part about it was accepting life on life, like coming to that moment, like making that decision of being like, yeah, I have to change. This has to stop. I have to be honest. I get that. I'm going to do it. And regardless of what happens in the next few days, weeks, or months, like that'll happen. I can't worry about that. I just have to work on my recovery. So yeah, that's, to me, that was the only insurmountable part about it. Once I made that decision, everything else kind of, I'm not going to say it was easy, but
none of us would.
None of us would.
Yeah, yeah. I want to make a clear distinction too. The difference between recovery, true recovery, and sort of white knuckling it. I think we've heard of that experience as well.
Yeah.
Just getting through. I think people can amass clean time, but that doesn't necessarily translate into recovery.
Right.
And I think what you're really talking about when you ask the question of does recovery work, that's something different than just surviving, just getting by. And I think Isaac's experience, you know, we've all been a part of Isaac's life for the last, I don't know, 5+ years in terms of his recovery time, and know full well what he's done, the commitment he's made to true recovery. And that is not the same thing as just white knuckling it and surviving.
Yeah, sure.
Because I don't think you'd have made that.
No.
No, absolutely. There was, and you know, from my story, there was a good portion of time where I was white knuckling it, where I wasn't.
Yeah.
And it always comes back.
It always comes back. I'm like, it's easy for me now in this moment to look at it retrospectively and be like, yeah, yeah, there was no way that was going to pan out. Right.
Yeah. Right.
So
just out of curiosity, since all of this has happened, as things have moved forward, what's that done in relation to your relationship with your parents? Where all of that sort of stemmed from. I'm certain you didn't go home and announce to mom and dad that they're the cause of all your problems.
No, because there's certain, I mean, yeah, it's hard because it's like it's throughout my life, it's easy to like point at certain experiences of certain people or certain concepts and be like, man, that really kind of helped now I see why I did what I did. Not necessarily saying that they are the fault
sure.
for my choices,
because sure.
I had every opportunity to not make the choice that I made mm-hmm. right in front of me.
Right.
What has that done with my relationship with my family of origin? If nothing else, it has given me, like, I still love my family of origin. I wouldn't change my parents or my brothers or anything like that at all, but I just don't care about what they think of me or who I am or what I'm doing in my life. Like, as I can't care about that, right? That was a big part of, like, oh, they're going to be so upset at me, and they're mm-hmm. going to be so mm-hmm. sad, and I'm going to be the one.
Yeah.
Who cares, man? Look, I mean,
and when you let that go, that's really recovery,
yeah,
isn't it? That's,
yeah, it's just like, I don't care. That. And I'm not going to say I'm perfect at it, right? Like, my wife will even tell you sometimes, like, if I'm ever around any of my other brothers, I can sometimes get a little back into the kid brother mode,
right.
of like,
sure.
hey, look at me,
victim.
You know,
yeah.
or like, same with the therapy, right? Like, look at me, I'm kind of cool like you guys, right? Like, give me an attaboy too. Look at yeah. my, you know, my wife's really good about that. But for the most part, I just, you know, I don't care what they think about me, who I am, the choices I've made, the choices I am making and choices that I could see myself making down the road. Like, if they want to have a relationship with me, this is who I am. And if they don't, that's fine too. So, and in that sense, it's gotten a lot better, right? Like, I can go down and visit, I can visit my folks, and, you know, my dad can be just as emotionally withdrawn from me now as a grown man as he was when I was a child. And, you know, that doesn't irritate me, right? Like, stuff like that used to irritate me. I'd go home and stew on it and resent, right? And all those negative emotional feelings would lead me to more acting out. So
that's fantastic. That's healthy. That's really healthy. When you finally arrive at the place where, okay, I recognize the effect that my family of origin had on my addictive behavior, and now I'm just okay. I had great parents that were doing the very best they could do under the circumstances they were operating under, and it may have been insufficient for what I needed. It may have been completely mm-hmm. insufficient for what I needed, but they did the best they could do, and I'm okay with that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's the right way of looking at it, you know.
Yeah.
All right. I have one more question.
Shoot.
Something that has always astonished me about my own recovery is, you know, when I look back over the clean time that I've accrued and the years from, you know, when I started recovery to where I am now, one thing that stands out to me, and I want to know if your experience is similar or how it may be different or whatever, but it never ceases to amaze me when I look at my life to think that, you know, I could not have even conceived my life being the way that it is now. I couldn't, you know what I mean? At the time that I started my work or when I was in my addictive stuff, I was impossible for me to imagine how good my life is now.
Right.
And
yeah, here we are.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I 100% totally get, I get what you're saying. And that the same applies to me, right? Like, there's no way that I could have ever, it's crazy. After I started really working recovery and started being honest with my wife, right? Like, our relationship got so much better. We ended up building a house together, right? And it kind of a bit of our dream house, right? And we've had another child since then. And, you know, I got a promotion at work, and then was able to get into a different organization where I work and get to do some really exciting, like, I couldn't have ever imagined being where I am now, you know, 5-6 years ago, you know, more than 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago, right? There's no way I could have imagined being where I am now. And the fun thing is how much, like, how real recovery has made it so that, like, my wife truly is my best friend and my best mm-hmm. confidant. And she, like, it's funny because, like, she always, her siblings are always wanting to do these family get-togethers or these sister getaways or mm-hmm. whatever. And she's always like, yeah, I don't really want to go to those. I'd rather just go somewhere with you and the kids, right? Like,
it's amazing.
And we want to have these shared experiences, and I want to do what she wants to do. She wants to do what I want to do. I'm really lucky this year. She's She's taking me up to Boston. We're going to go to Fenway and see a Red Sox game.
That's amazing. Fantastic.
It's been one of my, it's one of my bucket list item, life items, right?
Are you going to vote for the other team while you're there?
You can root for the Yankees?
Hey, Mike. How about I hold your head underwater for just a few minutes?
Oh, see, look at that. We've gone full circle. I started there, and now we're at the end of it.
That's fascinating. I'm thrilled to hear that. That really, no, that really is awesome. Is fun.
Yeah, I couldn't in my wildest dreams, Gary. I couldn't have if 6 years ago, if you would have sat me down and said, "What's your dream life going to look like?" I would not have been able to picture even this. Right.
Yeah, you know, that's the beautiful thing about, you know, turning your life over to the process or surrendering. This is, it's going to take you to a place where you can't imagine you're going to go.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. It's better
it's
than
a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, like, as I think about it, like, it's not necessarily just like all the cool, fun things that we've been able to do or get or obtain after that. It's I would even wager that if, like, you, from an outside perspective, if you looked at it, it's like my life is so great just because of how real it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That,
and it has nothing to do. It really doesn't have anything to do. Like, I could tell you that exact same thing. Even if we had gotten divorced, like, and if I wasn't doing all of these fun, cool things, getting all these, like, you know, I would tell you that my life is still so much, and I couldn't have imagined myself being where I am today.
But you still have the ups and downs of life.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. For sure.
You still got bills to pay and everything else.
But do you know what I think the difference is, really?
Mm-hmm.
Is that when I was in my addictive recovery, or when I was in my addiction, I was never me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I can be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to discover, like, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the only person I have to spend all of my time with, and it's kind of nice to be decent company.
Yeah, but before that would have scared you.
Oh yeah, oh, yeah. No, I would actively avoid being by yourself.
I don't want to be by me.
But you know, listening to your story, what really stands out to me is in the beginning, you had to hide, you couldn't be you,
yeah.
You know, and now, you know, listening to about the relationship with your wife, that one of the highlights is I get to be me. I get to talk to her. She's my best friend. She's my confidant. She knows me completely and accepts me.
So much so, she's taking me to Fenway.
Yeah, she's taking me to Fenway. We, you know, we enjoy each other's company and what we do, and we're not, there's
she's no excited pretense. To go too. Yeah. That's even better.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't want to take up too much time kind of heading off on that tangent, but you know, she always, I've always loved, I've had a few sports teams that have just been my favorite my whole life growing up. I'm a big Red Sox fan, right? And
all the memorabilia you're wearing would have every time I see.
I don't think I've ever seen him without a Red Sox hat.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah. Through much of our marriage, right? Up until recovery, she resented that about me.
Yeah.
She hated that I would just sit down and watch a game for, you know, 2-3 hours. That irritated her so badly.
Yeah.
And she looked at that as though that wasn't that I, you know, how you have all this time, you don't want to spend it with me. Why not? Mm-hmm. And having made that decision and flipping that switch and becoming somebody totally different, she now enjoys it as she realizes. She told me once, she said, I realize that those parts of you were the real parts of you, and the parts of you, like, as dumb as it might sound, but being a Red Sox fan really contributed to who the real Isaac was that she fell in love with and that she wants to continue to love. And because of that, now she'll sit down and watch a game with me. She loves it. Right, she'll sit down and watch a game.
That's amazing.
Me.
That's something.
Is she a Yankees fan or a Red Sox fan?
Can we get Mike out of here?
I can mute him.
We've tried.
My word,
he keeps coming back.
He even calls from across the country.
You know what? This listening to this reminds me of more than anything is the 9-step promise.
Yeah.
As I listen to all the successes you've had in your life as a result of your efforts in recovery and how things seem to fall into place, your relationships, your job and all these things that I think the 9-step promise tells us that, you know, these things that used to baffle us, right, that were so baffling that we couldn't figure out, that now suddenly are falling into place like they should, simply because recovery is now part of our life. That's what this reminds me of.
Do you know, one of the gifts that recovery has given me is the ability to enjoy somebody enjoying something and right. to really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, using your Red Sox thing as fun, I've never been a fan of sports. Well, you know, I like to go to the events. It's kind of a fun thing. But do you know what? I think, you know, that would be absolutely phenomenal to go and experience something yeah. like that. You know what I mean? Just to be able to, and I do that just with my wife there. All the time. Things that used to irritate me that she really enjoyed. Now I love it because I enjoy her enjoying it, and I get enjoyment from what we're doing for on a level that I didn't even realize was a thing.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. That's a great thing.
All right.
You're claiming we're out of time. Is that what you're saying?
We're out of time. We went over, but that's okay.
Sorry, guys.
No, you're fine. No,
you're great.
We kept it going. Yeah. You're fine. Well,
very much enjoyed spending the time with you, Isaac. Thank you very much. That was a really good discussion.
It was a really good discussion. Yeah,
very good to have
Thank
you on
for
the
sharing
show.
Your story with our listeners and your message of encouragement and recovery and hope. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's fantastic.
So it was very nice. So this is Mike saying, do the work necessary to find the peace that recovery can bring. And I think Isaac's example was exactly that, doing the work to find the peace that recovery brings. So thank you, Isaac.
Isaac, you got something to chime in?
No, thanks for having me. I'm so grateful for this opportunity. I would just say that insurmountable concept of being honest isn't as hard as it may seem in that moment, and the minute anybody makes that decision, they'll totally understand what I'm talking about. Got to do it.
Great comment.
All right, with that, this is Gary saying do the next right thing,
and this is Daniel saying find the humility in your recovery.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find us.
As a fellowship of recovering addicts, Sex Addicts Anonymous offers a message of hope to anyone who suffers from sex addiction. Check out saa-recovery.org.